The Simpsons take over Tracy Ullman. Angry Beavers debut on Nick. And Simon Pegg fights the greater good. This week on 30-2010.
30-2010. 30-2010. Three decades, every show, sometimes associated videos. 30-2010. 30-2010. The presses are awaiting. Yes, we're going to the 80s and the 90s. And 2000s. Yeah. On 30-2010.
We are ready for another look back at 30, 20, and 10 years ago. We go week by week. We're looking at April 14th through the 20th. I'm your host, one of your hosts,
Hi.
Brett.
And I am Suicide King Chris Antista.
I'm Dave Rudden, and I've got an enchanting musk.
I'm Diana Goodman. I experiment on chimps. Stop me, please.
Is this an MXC thing? I got bad teeth.
That's Diana Babaganoush.
Yes, we look back at this exact date range week by week. 30 years ago, that's 1987. 20 years ago, that's 97. And 10 years ago, 2007. Mm. You can find out more at 302010.net or Woo! Check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, Wondery, all the good stuff. Wondery.com/302010. We'll start in 1987 with the news.
The news.
Michael Jordan, after playing 2 years, becomes the second player to score 3,000 points in a season.
Ooh. So the heyday of Jordan wasn't until the 90s, but was he this great from the onset?
Yeah. I mean, they're probably like a year or two away from the Bulls starting to win all their championships. Mm-hmm. But even then, they're still like really, really good.
Yeah.
Not quite championship level, but still damn good.
Even though where I grew up, it's Illinois, but it's so far south that people tend to lean more towards St. Louis for Cardinals or whatever. But they have no basketball team. Mm. So Bulls mania was in full swing even that far down, and even Kentucky, it's like college basketball would take over, but like again for NBA it was always Bulls.
And I just did the math to score 3,000 points in a season. If you're playing every single game, you have to average 36.5 points per game.
Wow.
And getting those half points,
they play 100 games.
That's not easy. Getting a half point.
They
in
play
the NBA.
More games than any.
They play 82 games per season.
Oh.
That's more than
they're all. Yeah. Each one of them special.
Yes,
all 4 hours.
No, they
don't like sports. Hi, everybody.
Went to a Warriors game a few weeks ago.
You should love football. They only do it 16 times a year.
Yes,
that's literally why I love football.
I'm a boxing man.
I'm the opposite. I'm a baseball guy.
I'm the heavyweight champion. How much do you fight? 2 times in the last decade.
I like they make a weekend of it. Like, hey, let's play each other Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Which sport is most indicative of your sex life,
though? Hi-li.
2 times a year?
Curling.
Because there's brooms involved?
Yeah, brooms.
Always have to sweep up after.
It's like, I'm a 16 times a year man.
And I can't stand it when my pubic hair is straight.
Movies this week. Rumpelstiltskin.
This is crazy!
The first of... It's been a while.
The trailer explains it.
It's been a couple weeks since
we talked about Canon Films, but again, see the documentary Electric Boogaloo, the insane Golden Globus organization of the 80s that released a fucking movie every single week.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks, hasn't it?
Yeah.
This movie tale series, as the trailer will explain, it will have 6 entries this year alone.
It's insane.
Canon Films is proud to present a series of classic movie tales. The first, starring Amy Irving. Once, there lived a poor miller's daughter.
Everything she touches turns to gold.
All right, it's Rumpelstiltskin, but I'd never heard of this, that... Golden Globes was so confident. Dude, they're making horror movies. They're making Othello. They're making Chuck Norris movies. They're like, well, these Disney movies are great. Yeah. Why don't we make these public domain fantasy stories and turn them into family-friendly musicals? And they did, and they look insane. There are talking animal puppets. Billy Barty is in his only starring role as Rumpelstiltskin.
Good for him.
You can hear his title call out somewhere in there.
Little elf named...
Oh, no, you don't. I'll keep that to myself. Silent club. Spinning wheel. Spin as I say.
This looks crazy, and I've never heard of any of these films.
It looks really dark.
It's
lit really dark.
It looks porny. Yeah. But there's a robot bird. That voice you heard is a robot bird. Yeah. Ow.
What the fuck?
The Washington Post review said all this did was make a short story long.
Yeah. And they made 6 of them.
Six this year.
6 this year. Christopher Walken in Puss in Boots? What the fuck?
What?
I've never heard
of
Canon.
I love these boots.
It's an imprint of Canon Films called Canon Movie Tales that they set up because they thought they could rival Disney. Yeah. So
I love
Canon Films is so nuts. There's a documentary on them. That doesn't mention this.
Yeah, that's
six,
crazy.
Six movies.
That's crazy. It's also great that I think we went maybe 2 weeks without a canon film in 1987, and they came back with a vengeance.
Yes. The first of many movies.
Well, look, we took 2 weeks off. We are back with a separate wing of canon films.
Oh, fucking insane.
But also at this week, prick up your ears.
I put the trailer in there because I don't want to explain it.
With Gary Oldman.
Coming in May from Virgin Vision, the powerful true life story of British playwright Joe Orton.
That's it. And I always see in Virgin Vision.
Joe Orton, the father of Randy Orton.
I got to assume there's a title call. No, just artsy.
So if your husband was here, Diana, he would probably yell about how the turn of phrase is not perk up your ears, it's prick up your ears.
Which
prick up your ears.
Was also the name of a Family Guy episode where a ear fucking craze takes over high school.
I've never heard this.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. But a Gary Oldman starring Joanne about a gay playwright. Hooray! There's too many things to talk about in this section.
We also have
I've heard it's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's what said to my ears.
Project X.
Project X, not that one. It's one of the few movies we talked about that has a very specific title, but there's another movie called that.
Yes.
From 2012, the found footage kids go to a party movie.
Yeah. Project X seems like a character in like 8 video games. I am Project X.
I'm not going to call it out every time. You could name any movie that Project X. Literally anyone. Rogue One, Project X.
Prick up your ears.
Scott Pilgrim, Project X.
Driving Miss Daisy.
Project X. It was my code name.
In the war.
In the war. The Great War.
Matthew Broderick, Helen Hunt managed chimpanzees in the Air Force. Project X.
Let me hear this.
Jimmy Garrett joined the Air Force for the challenge.
I just hope I'm up to it.
But instead of Top Gun...
Does this mean I'll be flying soon?
No, not you. Them.
They made him Top Banana.
These are monkeys.
What is... Wait,
it shot the monkey, right?
Is that Genesis or something?
It's Peter Gabriel?
Sorry. Wow.
1982, Shock the Monkey.
Did we get the title?
Matthew Broderick in Project X.
Yeah, great.
Shock the Monkey!
It's just weird that they're selling it as a comedy. I remember it as being kind of, like, sad, and they have to, like, rescue the monkeys, because the monkeys are being, like... brain damaged by something.
They killed the monkeys 9 times.
Oh, no.
So, that's fair to say. They
might have noticed all those monkeys.
There was a note in there that Bob Barker of...
you don't stop and throw your poop around every once in a while.
Of Price is Right fame, who at the end of every episode, you know, famous vegan would also be like, spay and neuter your pets. He alleged animal cruelty, and eventually this movie had to settle out of court. And I think they filed back of like, you can't just say that. You can't just say we were bad animals. You got to prove it or something.
Well,
bad
blood. He did win, but unfortunately the bid was $1, Bob.
Also this week.
But
this, I just, animals.
There's animals in this movie, and because chimps don't talk, they had to get somebody to voice the chimps. And if you listen to the last episode, you get one guess who it was.
F. Welker?
Actually, no, it wasn't. No, never mind. But they do. There is a human beings voicing monkeys with their nonsense talk.
I think you're talking about Wild Thing, yes?
Wild Thing looks insane. Did I put that trailer in there?
Yes.
I've never heard of this, but this sounds insane.
He was an orphan. Left to perish in the downtown wilderness.
Hey, you! Hey, hey!
Instead, he thrived.
They say he can turn himself into an alley cat.
He became a hunter.
It's a half-human creature that haunts his own.
A warrior.
Now, why not write this web down that they've seen it?
It's about a... orphan kid who grows up in fucking New York and becomes like a feral superhero. Goes up against the whole town is cheering on, that goes up against inner city street gangs. What the fuck? Man. This sounds crazy. And I have never heard of it. It has Kathleen Quinlan in it, who I only know is like a punchline you put in TV movies. I don't know anything about this. Never heard of it, but of all the movies, it sounds the most intriguing, and it looks like John Sayles worked on the script.
What?
This is an insane movie, like twin movie week, because there's a movie that's kind of a similar premise that I watched as a kid, weirdly, and I feel like nobody else has even heard of.
I know, because it's a big break for one of the most famous comedians of this period.
Yeah, Walk Like a Man, starring Howie Mandel. The trailer explains it.
Discovered in the wilderness.
Where have you been for the last 28 years? I was beginning to get worried.
He was raised by
wolves.
Returned to a world he doesn't understand.
Oh, I want to sign him up for tennis lessons.
And if you skip to a minute 27, you get the call out of the surprisingly big cast.
Like a man. Christopher Lloyd.
All that money, what's he going to spend it on? Kibble?
Colleen Camp.
Hold yourself.
Cloris Leachman.
We will neuter a cat in your name.
And Howie Mandel as Bobo.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so he's a boy left in the wilderness, raised by wolves. His family finds him. He's set to inherit, like, a large fortune, but his brother, played by Christopher Lloyd, doesn't want him to get that money, but they're trying to make him civilized so he can accept the inheritance. And it's
like forgot about the premise.
It's like a Tarzan, Lord of the Apes
George
comedy.
George and the Jungle. Jungle to Jungle.
Yep.
I can't, like...
But, like, it's, like, in that pantheon of, like, My Boyfriend's Back and, like, movies where it's, like, they someone heard a song on the radio and was like, got it.
Yeah.
Go film that Frankie Valli song.
Make that scene happen and put 90 minutes of the same joke.
Clear out 2 hours for me on Saturday. I'm going to write this entire movie.
I have never seen this. I'll put this $10 bill down that Howie Mandel drinks out of the toilet at one point in the film.
I think it has to be.
I'm going to bet.
It's independently financed. It's not like a big, like, you know, studio movie.
Someone had a dream.
Yeah, that's the weird part.
Just gags where it's like, here he is walking on all fours. He wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Like, your human anatomy is like, it's uncomfortable to do this.
Taught him that, though.
He would be like, you know, this works better for me. I'll stand up. Like,
should be. It's a nice sequel to The Jungle Book, though.
Yeah, but it's also one of those movies where it's like, it came out on DVD, but only in full screen, because it's like,
oh, really?
The people who made this don't care.
didn't block the widescreen version properly. Yeah. There's like other people walking through the set.
Yeah, the original film negative, it turns out it was used as streamers for a Christmas party. No one has those edges.
No one who made the movie cares. No one who's going to watch the movie cares. Mm-hmm.
And taking us out of movies, this is not the biggest movie by any means, but I have the most to say about it. Nowhere near as much as a few late last year when I talked about kind of the companion piece to this movie.
Oh, wow. Their histories are wrapped together.
They are wrapped together. 30 years ago.
America's number one superhero team explodes in the home video screen in their very first major motion picture blockbuster, G.I. Joe the Movie.
Number one superhero team.
They're not super. Do any of them have abilities?
No, some of these guys are just mechanics.
Walter Payton is one of them, I think.
Yeah, superhero is used very loosely, but like at the time, like there's no like one. You have to think Cold War era, so saying American superhero team is like okay, you're going to get people to see that, and then also. We don't have, like, there's no Avengers movies or, like, Spider-Man.
Like,
the cachet of comic books in media outside of comics is pretty low. So
Avengers, Fantastic Four, Justice League, they were all around. Defenders of Dinatron City, just a glimmer in your eye.
But I think this is what, like, right off of, like, Superman Quest for Peace, where it's like, yeah, let's stop doing these for a decade.
Yeah. So this was intended to be a theatrical release, but between the poor performance of My Little Pony, the movie, and Transformers, the movie... They decided to go direct to video.
Yeah, and this is Hasbro trying to turn their toy lines into movie properties.
Yes, and I already went to bat for a long time for Transformers the movie last year because it turned 30. We watched it. We have a commentary track. Yeah. Absolutely adore that movie, and I still maintain it is a good movie. Mm-hmm. There are different kinds of good. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a Subway sandwich is good. It's not House of Prime Rib.
It's not nobody's favorite sandwich.
The premier lemonade out of lemons story where, like, you write a story about toys. Mm-hmm. Go. Like, okay, well, we'll spend $6 million and animate the shit out of it and hire the best, most famous people in the 80s from Leonard Nimoy to Judd Nelson to a dying Orson Welles. We're going to get them all in here, and goddamn it, we're going to make this movie. G.I. Joe, we're going to shrink that budget a lot because the performance of those movies, they're like, actually, no, we're out. But
and they were planning, like Transformers, to bring wrangle a bunch of kids in a theater, not unlike Roberto Benigni in that movie where he lures kids to the gas chamber, and then kill all their favorite characters in front of their face.
So
and
this one was only going to be Duke, who is the main character of the show, more or less, the poorly animated bad cartoon show that I also. I grew up as a kid loving the G.I. Joe cartoon and the Transformers cartoon. They're both really bad. I hated
G.I. Joe. My aunt would always get me like discount G.I. Joe figures for my birthday. I would drive nails through them, bury them in the earth.
So I had no G.I. Joe toys as a kid. I had every vehicle because they were planes. And my dad is always like, here's the thing that looks like an F... This is vaguely an F-14, the Sky Striker. Anyway.
So I have a question.
Uh-huh.
This was written and made as a film?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's not just a bunch of episodes strung together?
No, not at all. It's like the Transformers one where they intended... This is... Raising the stakes, we're introducing new villains that are above the tier of the TV show villains. I can't wait to tell you who the main villain is voiced by. It's going to be great. Because much like
it's going to be Frank Welker, isn't it?
No. Even better. But Duke, who was supposed to die a la Optimus Prime, was supposed to be killed in the movie. After the reaction from kids and parents, like, you can't graphically kill... The hero of the show and the toy, my kid
invincible cartoon character
came to this movie clutching the toy, murdered, and then dies in his hand, and he turns black and rots away on screen. Like, you can't do that. Yeah. And actually, you should. Kids should learn about
that. Bobby, what's death?
I absolutely love that movie does that. It doesn't.
I'm gonna drown myself so I can be with Optimus Prime.
Like, I applaud that movie for dealing with death better than half of the PG-13 movies that come out today. That everyone dies off screen, or the piercing impact is not visibly shown. No one in a Hunger Games movie dies violently on screen. You always, someone like three quarters in frame murdered. Like, who cares? No one's bleeding. No one's dying. Sad. Like, here's a truck man who gets his guts ripped out. As a kid, I moved. But Duke gets stabbed with a snake in the heart. I thought it more of a reaction for that. But let me sell it again. A snake is hurled at a man and it pierces his chest.
What? And then, Bonnie?
And then they add lines of dialogue after the fact. They're like,
he's in a coma.
And then at the end of the movie, you have a line, Duke's out of the coma.
Oh, so he doesn't actually come back?
He does not come back. He is supposed to die in the movie. And then they're like, Mr. Black, like, Duke is fine. Like,
now he's friends with the snake.
Yes.
It became its pet.
But my favorite part of this movie is the voice cast.
Miami Vice super cop Don Johnson stars as the voice of Lieutenant Falcon, the playboy whose shenanigans land him in the slaughterhouse.
I've been expecting you.
Ruled by who else but that patriot of pain, the incredibly awesome Sergeant Slaughter.
You're going to war till you wish you were dead.
Then it's off to Cobra Land, where the terrifying Globulus, brilliantly voiced by Burgess Meredith, reveals his plan to destroy the minds of every human on Earth.
This pitiful planet will be ours.
Now, right in their own homes, kids everywhere can see if G.I. Joe can still save the day in this.
They do. But it's just like, there's scenes with Sergeant Slaughter arguing with Burgess Meredith.
Mm-hmm.
And Burgess Meredith plays a man that from the waist down is a ball of snakes.
I made snakes rock.
Cobra Commander is turned into a snake and has to Gollum style hunch over Roadblock's shoulders while he rhymes every sentence he says. It's an insane movie that takes regular military guys fight supernatural snake men while just F-14s rain from the sky. Absolutely insane.
That intro is pretty epic.
So
the intro of the movie is amazing.
Absolutely. So I will say this movie, not like, I will absolutely not go to bat for this like I will Transformers the movie. Yeah. But G.I. Joe the movie, the first, like, 5 minutes is the most American thing you'll ever watch in your life. It will make you want to sign up the moment it's over. And it's the best thing G.I. Joe has ever done and will ever do.
And it's like a musical.
It is a musical. It is a bombastic score.
Yeah, like a military graduation that takes place on the head of the Statue of Liberty.
It is like an elaborate... Yes. It is an elaborate performance where they save the Statue of Liberty, and it's so... It's blocked like a musical. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's time for the Here They Come, American Hero. And, like, all the villains you want. And what's great is it's this completely self-contained thing where Cobra is trying to blow up the Statue of Liberty. Mm-hmm. Why? Because. What a blow to the American psyche it would be.
The morale will crumble!
Yes, and they save the Statue of Liberty in just the most stirring beautifully animated thing I've ever seen American moxie put to. Mm-hmm. And then hard cut to super slow down the pace, super cut back the animation budget, and they work that moment into the canon where now all the villains go, Cobra Commander, you suck. You lose constantly. You are fired. And it's the only time I've seen a show acknowledge, like, you have lost every fight you have ever engaged in. You're out of here. And they fire Cobra Commander and shoot spores in his face and turn him into a snake.
Wow.
But here's also when the other Don Johnson, who's the new rough and tumble guy.
I'm sure he'll be in the series.
He has to go. Yeah, he'll come back. Named Flint. He has to go. He gets busted out because he doesn't play by the rules, of course. He has to go get beat up by Sergeant Slaughter, who runs his own group. And Sergeant Slaughter at this point is like full on WWF.
It's a WWF character.
It's a weird break where he was like, he was in WWE till like 1985 or so, 1986. Mm-hmm. Took a couple years break. I think probably like this was part of it. Mm-hmm. And then he came back in like the early 90s. I think after the show had just gotten rid of the character or was not airing at all. And then that's when he became
really
the Iraqi
confused.
Sympathizer.
I thought the G.I. Joe character came to WWF.
And turned to an Iraqi sympathizer.
Yeah.
So the character and the man playing him are both Sergeant Slaughter.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So here
Diana has her eyes closed.
I forget how that works, actually. And here WWE's licensing Sergeant Slaughter, or I think it's Vice. I think G.I. Joe is licensing Sergeant Slaughter from WWE.
I think that's true. So, and these are a perfect fit because everyone here has ridiculous costumes and over the top acting. So here's Sergeant Slaughter with just some fun lines about how he's going to whip Flint into shape.
You're going nowhere, Space Case. You're here because you're an industrial spray follow up. My job is to whip you into shape. And I'm talking whip. There's only two ways out of my command. On your feet like a man, or in a ditty bag. An itty bitty ditty bag.
A ditty bag.
And
is
this movie
a body
delivers
bag.
Moment by moment. It is absolutely insane. It is.
No, it is not a body bag.
Oh, it's not?
No.
What is an itty bitty
bag? It's an acronym for do it yourself bag, and it's how. What happens when you're discharged as a military. Mm. You're like. Pack your bags and get the fuck out.
Oh. So that's all. I'll say, like, I don't know. We're probably going to try to watch it for one of our Monday night movies in April. Yeah.
It seems worth it.
It's not long, and you're in and out, and you'll just be like, you'll blink your eyes when it's over. Like, what?
It's got an itty-bitty running time.
It's a little of Dr. Light in there from one of our previous episodes. And then my command.
Mega Man. Don't you put Sergeant Slaughter in that same boat.
Dr. Lally?
You're Dr. Wobulous. Attack Shipwreck.
But speaking of things that came from TV.
Yes, a big week for animation.
Yes,
I will say,
actually, yes.
Because April 19th, 1987 was the first appearance of The Simpsons.
Wow.
Via The Tracey Ullman Show. This is like the third episode, I think, of Tracey Ullman.
Yeah.
And the very first, and if you've seen the 138th episode Spectacular of The Simpsons, you know
they
what this is. This amazing bit of animation. Which, yes, very heady jokes, hilariousness will ensue.
God, the animation.
Well, good night, son.
Dad?
Yeah?
What is the mind? Is it just a system of impulses, or is it something tangible?
Relax. What is mind? No matter. What is matter? Never mind.
Jesus. All right.
So, yeah, I think the story...
Very crudely animated, off-model.
Not talking way out of their character. Like, I mean, Homer is kind of like Homer, but Bart asking about the human mind.
Yeah, the voice is there.
All he
Bart
cares about
real
is skateboarding.
Existential.
Yeah.
The story goes Matt Groening was making an underground comic, Life in Hell.
Yeah.
And I think only a few years ago stopped. He wrote a comic every month or every week while doing The Simpsons.
And they wanted him to do a cartoon. And they wanted him to do Life in Hell. He didn't want to do that.
I think that's Simpsons. Why he was signed on.
Life is Hell.
Not Life in Hell.
Is it in Hell?
Yes. Life in Hell.
Okay. It's the books that are blank as hell.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
And I think that he did sign on to do Life in Hell, and somewhere in the process, they're like, he didn't want to do that. And if you think about it,
this humor is very life.
It is, but it was more like, well, we'll do a show about a family named after all my family members. What? How did they let him get away with that? Like, no, we want the Life in Hell people. We want the gay fez wearing guys and the half bunny people. The Simpsons, so bizarre. It's so bizarre. And if you listen to Talking Simpsons, we go through the first season. And it's awesome to be able to really, we're big Simpsons nerds, dig into first character appearances.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how many of them appear in these shorts.
Yeah.
And or, like, somehow Butterfinger was on board with these shorts before the show. So Milhouse debuts in a Butterfinger commercial.
Yeah.
Oh. And other characters do as well. Like, I don't know how Butterfinger saw potential in The Simpsons. Mm. But it,
I mean, I think...
After, it's before the Christmas special.
Yeah, but within, a couple months, I would say, like, I think The Simpsons sort of overshadowed Tracey Ullman on her own show.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And these shorts, while not great, it is fascinating to see how they evolve from... You need to see what this short looks like, because they're
so
way off model. But like by the third season of Tracey Ullman, they look like
The
Simpsons.
There's another one that they show in the 138th episode where it's Bart in the bathtub as Bart Clouseau or something.
It's technically a better animated.
It's better than a lot of season one episodes. It's like, this is really, really good.
Yeah. And the short is called Good Night.
Yes. It's every kid in The Simpsons trying to fall asleep and failing to, and they all go in the same bed at the end.
Visualizing When the Bow Breaks, the Cradle Will Fall. Yep. Like a horrific song to sing.
I want
to child.
Perpetually animated GIF of Maggie falling out of a tree. That's just looping indefinitely.
Yeah. So following up on those two is a slightly less notable bit of animation, Bionic 6.
I was so into this show.
Which is not all that memorable, but I do remember this song a lot. I love this song.
Is this the movie?
We are a family.
It says it all right here.
Did the chorus of this?
Yes.
I'm just going to try and improvise.
I am the mountain, or deep in the sea.
Here we go.
Bionic 6. We're all together. We fight for rights. Bionic 6.
But it's like a family.
Come and get your fix.
They're like a family that has superpowers.
Oh. Each of them has some weird specific proficiency. So like one of them is like this athlete guy who always has like gimmick baseball bats. Mm-hmm. Or
this isn't the movie Uma Thurman described in Pulp Fiction.
No. But like it's one of those classic 80s cartoons where the opening is gorgeously animated and the main show is like, what happened?
And the show went for like one season.
I had the toys of this, like, it because it was like comic book characters, cartoons. Mm-hmm. And since there was no Spider, like, I missed Amazing Friends Spider-Man completely. Super Friends I never liked.
Yeah.
So this was like, here's a show of like a very Mr. Fantastic Reed Richards kind of guy with a villain who's like, I think his name was Scarab or something like that. And it's like, when you're trying to watch Silver Hawks and all this other stuff and that's not on, Bionic 6 was on. And I just remember being so into the show.
They're described as great American superheroes, just like G.I. Joe.
Yes.
Oh, they should fight.
Speaking of American heroes, April 5th, 1987, the Magnum P.I. episode Limbo airs. And this is notable because it was originally meant to be the series finale. Magnum, Tom Selleck, he's critically wounded during a firefight, and he ends up in a coma. He wakes up, he believes he's dead, insisting that he's only dreaming, but a friend that he has can see or hear him. He finally accepts that he's dead and says his goodbyes in limbo. Then the beginning of next season, he wakes up out of the coma.
So they were going to kill him at the end of the series?
Yeah.
That's a hard finale.
Yeah. More like Saddenum P.I. and to close out, a couple of Easter-related things. April 17th, 1987, the special Andy Williams and the NBC Kids Easter in Rome airs.
Oh, no.
The NBC Kids? Have
NBC
they done work
Kids,
prior to this?
I guess so, but here I gave you a clip of it.
Oh, God.
Friday begins with a musical Easter tree as Andy Williams and the NBC Kids visit the beautiful city of Rome.
Cobblestone Street.
Experience the fun Roman style. From the spectacular sights to the Pope's special holiday blessing, Andy Williams and the NBC Kids celebrate Easter in Rome Friday.
Hey, you got a double Friday there.
Friday.
Open and close with Fridays.
So with garbage like this on TV, why wouldn't you go see G.I. Joe?
I don't know. But if that was too religious for you.
Who
there was
thought of that?
NBC aired another Easter special that was very same week.
Oh,
on Easter Sunday itself, NBC aired Bob Hope with his beautiful Easter bunnies and other friends.
Oh no.
I'm going to guess this holds up really well.
Yeah.
What is the Bob Hope count for the show?
Yeah.
When
oh,
we're
God,
not
Lord.
Even a, we're like a year and 4 months into the show at this point.
Yeah.
How many times? Three or four.
The Bob Hope special's in its 85th season.
Yeah.
And
It has nothing to do with the show itself, but there's a clip of Linda Carter singing Great Balls of Fire, which is amazing. What? Wonder Woman singing Great Balls of Fire. It's like, okay.
But again,
I will watch this on Easter Sunday, thank
only
you.
Only say for a Chris's Classic Corner, 10 years before that, Diana, is the Fred Astaire narrated The Easter Bunny's Coming to Town in 77, which I've seen two times for some reason.
That's it for TV this week.
As the Jew around here, what does this have to do with Christ rising from the grave, dying for our sins?
Ah, you see that kid? It's Rome. This is where the Jews killed him.
Yeah, just like my gospel, Jesus rose.
That Jesus is sure dynamite.
You go to church in the morning, right? And then you come home and you eat ham.
Ham, and you find eggs.
Which is the flesh of Christ, eggs. The ham? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you watch a Bob Hope special.
A Bob Hope special, yes.
With
I don't know.
Punch of apparently objectified women.
No, that can't be what the bunnies are.
His beautiful Easter bunnies and other friends. At least the bunnies got a call out. Yeah. Like, they didn't even get... The other friends don't get Billy.
Sometimes I'm dying to see these specials because Dana Gould has a great bit about like being on one of the last Bob Hope specials and how old and incapable he was of like being on television, but they kind of like...
But I can still swing a golf.
Dangled a Centrum Silver in front of him like a carrot and shoved him out on camera. Jesus Christ. But these specials, I love that they're like...
They're awful.
He's one of the most famous people in pop culture history, and these are nowhere. Like, what do these even look like?
Taking us out of the 80s, we got nothing again really in games, but video games. We try to mention arcade games when appropriate, but like we've always said, finding a precise date for any arcade game kind of tough because they just roll out of Chicago or the West Coast, and wherever they end up is where they end up. So I do remember Zybots in arcades with an XY bots.
Was it Japan? The G.I. Joe movie was turned into a weird light gun game. So it's the footage from the movie with a light gun display over it. Yeah, and you would kind of shoot shit that happened on scene. Your movement would have no bearing on what happened on screen.
Yeah, it's like Dragon's Lair or something.
Yeah, it would just accumulate a score.
Interesting.
Sorry, I meant to mention that.
Zybots is this game where it's third person, so you see your character and you walk into these 3D mazes and you just kind of rotate 90 degrees within this maze and shoot enemies that appear. I remember playing it in an Italian restaurant growing up. That Italian restaurant is still there to this day. Two characters... In this game, their names. Oh. Think super macho 80s gun-toting sci-fi dudes.
Hmm.
Their two names are Ace Gunn and Rock Hardy.
Rock Hardy is a cocksmith.
Those are both adult stars and you fucking know it.
And they're both in prison.
My name's Ace Jizz.
I've played this a few times because it has been re-released, like, I think a half dozen times in various like, Midway compilations, including as recently as last year in LEGO Dimensions.
Wow,
The
LEGO Dimensions, they have a Midway level pack or something where you can play.
I believe Warner acquired those assets.
There's a Zybots LEGO Dimensions?
It's part of it where I think it's just a LEGO Dimensions level where you can play old arcade games.
Interesting. Music this week, taking us out of the 80s. No notable albums that I could find for this week in 1987. But the number one song is I Knew You Were Waiting For Me.
Yay!
Aretha Franklin and George Michael.
Love this song.
But I have no other chance to take us out, so I'm playing the musical portion of the G.I. Joe music.
God damn it! How could you do that to Aretha and the late, great George Michael?
It took again in 10 years.
They've been on the show before.
No.
But this they'll never be another time.
Yeah. We already played Bionic 6, so.
Yeah, I mean, I got to play to the audience here. But this is a piece of the opening of the G.I. Joe. Like, I want you to imagine Cobra parachuting in with a billion colors on screen. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Aretha does that.
Then bring her in. Bring her in. When we come back this same week, 1997.
Tall with banners high. You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
The first clip here is an episode of Golden Girls. Comes back from break, and mm-hmm. it's Estelle Getty sitting on the couch watching TV, and this was just funny, like, the terminology she uses here. I'm like,
you call that wrestling, you pansy? If you can't take a crutch slam like a man, get out of the business.
Damn.
Just get out of the business is such a, like, modern phrase. Yeah. Like, that she knows it's all fake and is just like, this guy sucks.
The dirt sheets were wrong.
Yes, like,
it's terrible.
And it just
his work rate is bad.
Yes, like that she's judging it on this meta level of like, oh, this specific wrestling joke. And it's just like an
when
in
he
and
turned
out.
Face, no pop. No pop at all.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
Depeche Mode, It's No Good.
That's really vague.
From the album Ultra.
That came out this year?
97.
Wow.
Their ninth album. It's No Good was the main song. I remember hearing this on the radio, and for me, like, we just played the Saint song from the movie The Saint. Duran Duran had the song mm-hmm. Out of My Mind, and mm-hmm. Duran Duran and Depeche Mode were both these bands that were huge in the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, Duran Duran, I think, ascended higher because mm-hmm. they had the, like, it's four British dudes or whatever.
They're very pretty.
They're pop.
They're very poppy, yeah. And to have them both back still in the conversation in the mid-90s, especially both in 97 having new albums out, Duran Duran's Midazzleland, which sucks. And Depeche Mode's Ultra, didn't totally like it, but this song, It's No Good, is super great, and I really recommend. And also Violator, Depeche Mode in general. Like, it's so good. Great band. Also out this week, Seven Dust's debut album... My Ruin was a song they had on 1996's More Combat album, which was the soundtrack sequel to the soundtrack.
Their name should be 1997 Dust.
They have the songs Bitch,
Timeless,
Black, mm-hmm. and
Black Bitch,
and Too Close to Hate. But Seven Dust will obviously gain steam as the years go on.
Yeah, and their music got better once they got back together with their dad.
And also out, Four Monkeys, Melancholin's third album.
Oh.
You'll most likely know Melancholin for their 2000 album that has No Cigar on it with Tony Hawk 2, which is so good.
Yeah. I have a couple of Melancholin albums, and you don't know it. Like I got introduced to them through Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're Swedish.
Oh.
So like they know English, but like sometimes some of their songs, it's like.
And you do not
kind of broken English, and it's like, okay, I understand what you're saying here.
And I don't. It's so strange that they nailed the like bratty like the attitude a lot of us would have in an American high school in No Cigar. Like it's really you do not get a Swedish vibe from it at all.
No,
like I don't know. But Four Monkeys, Melancholin's third album, also out this week. News this week. MLB honors Jackie Robinson by retiring the number 42 for all teams.
No matter where you go. Any stadium, you will see among the retired numbers 42 for Jackie Robinson, and I mean, I think that also means like teams can't use that number anymore.
That's literally retired. You can't use that number.
Yeah, and I always like it's weird because I go to Shea Stadium back in the day. Now it's Citi Field. Mm. The Mets have only retired like four or five numbers. But it's like I see three numbers and I'm always 42. Who's 42? I remember Doc Gooden. And I remember Tom Seaver. Oh, yeah, Jackie Robinson, because every team has retired that number.
I don't know anything about baseball, and my uncle and cousin were super excited about seeing a movie 42, and I had to say, what's that about? And they looked at me like I was an idiot, because every baseball person immediately made sense to them, and it made no sense to me.
Right. Yeah, it's one of those numbers every baseball fan knows, like 61, the original home run record.
Yep. So everyone If you don't know who Jackie Robinson is, he was the first black guy allowed to play in the White League.
I look at him as the first black guy to abandon the Negro League. So he is not a hero to me. They really needed him. They were down that seat.
Movies this week. Yes. Oh, boy. Man, this lineup of movies sucks.
Yeah, a lot.
We'll start with Joe Pesci, our friend.
Hi.
Eight heads in a duffel bag.
Bring me their heads.
That's enough.
Totally, that's totally fine.
I love we've got a... Besides, we've got eight heads in a duffel bag. It's a head-to-head fight of Tarantino knockoffs.
Yes, wow. Exactly.
So, yes.
This is the much more egregious example.
This is one that tries to be funny
and
isn't?
Well, it's... Oh, man. It's directed by... What's his name? Tom Schulin, maybe? Wrote a bunch of... His biography is insane. Wrote the movie Medicine Man, but also retired Gene Hackman with Welcome to Mooseport, the Ray Romano joint. What About Bob? Second Sight, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, which I love the trivia on that. He had to turn it into a comedy in 8 days. And
what?
Yes, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids was not a comedy. Apparently.
Wow, really?
It's not the comedy.
You're supposed to say the title like you're crying. I Shrunk the Kids.
Wow.
I have no idea, but what a crazy biography. Tom Schulman. Eight heads in a duffel bag. Joe Pesci is a hitman who has to bring eight heads back to his boss, and he gets on a plane, checks the bag, and it gets the old switcheroo with a normie's bag.
Oh,
this
my
is
goodness.
Back when shenanigans TSA was lax, and you could put eight heads in a duffel bag on a flight.
There was just no security.
Yeah.
And that's
nobody.
It's
not like they had X-ray machines back then.
That's literally the only reason this movie doesn't hold up. No. this movie's fucking terrible. It was one of the first movies I ever saw Entertainment Weekly give an F.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
It was like, usually, you're a Hollywood movie, you're going to get at least a D.
Yeah. But what about that classic scene where Joe Pesci says, "Do I look like eight heads in a duffel bag to you?"
That didn't happen.
So
it's not from
title,
the movie.
Like all the actors in this?
Just when they could top line films, Jesus.
The bull and tell us what the hell's going on.
Joe Pesci.
Who are you?
In this particular instance, I'm just a bag man.
David Spade.
Chopping off heads just takes it out of you, huh?
And Christy Swanson.
What a head case.
Is that supposed to be a joke?
Yep, there's a lot of head jokes. They do throw a grandmother out of carts full speed. That was kind of funny.
Okay.
Fuck this movie. Why are we still talking about this?
Moving
Somebody
on.
Segue.
Suicide Kings with Christopher Walken.
Which I really like this movie.
You're our hostage, Charlie.
My sister Elise is kidnapped. The kidnappers demanded $2 million ransom.
I got nothing to do with kidnapping.
Kidnappers sent a package. If she loses an eye, you lose an eye.
What's in a package?
Eight heads.
Great!
It's Walken freaking out. I really like this movie. A ton of great cast too.
Yep.
Henry Thomas, also known as Elliot. Sean Patrick Flannery, Jay Moore, Jeremy Sisto, Johnny Galecki.
Wow, that's a lot of people.
And Christopher Walken. And a bunch of prep school boys. There's one of their sisters is kidnapped, and there's a ransom for $2 million. So their idea, not being able to get $2 million right away, is to kidnap a retired Tony Soprano type, which is Christopher Walken. And so even though he has nothing to do with the kidnapping, they're sort of like, but you know that world, motherfucker. And so they send her finger, and we'll send your finger unless you help us get her back and or come up with a ransom. And it's neat. It all takes place in one house. It turns out Jeremy Sisto's a doctor, and like, you cut off his finger? And like, yep. He's an alcoholic, and his blood doesn't clot. So he's like, you have no leg to stand on. He's about to die, and you gave him medication, blood thinner medication, and now you've created an... It's really fun. It's a dark comedy, Tarantino period for sure, but like I love this movie.
I would have loved to have been on this set just because it has Christopher Walken and the best Christopher Walken impersonator, Jay Moore. Dogs eating his own tail.
Jay Moore's like the only person I know that was... It's on The Simpsons to do his impression.
Yeah, weird.
When the only time Christopher Walken appears to read a story, it's Jay Moore doing the impression. Weird. Suicide King's cool, though. Good movie. Then no one involved with it seemed to go on to do anything else. But I thought everybody saw this movie for some reason.
No. Nope. We all were busy seeing.
We're all, apparently, I haven't seen either of the other two left, but I do remember when this came out, McHale's Navy.
Tom Arnold, David Alan Grier, Dean Stockwell, Deborah Messing, with Tim Curry, Danton Stone, Bruce Campbell, and French Stewart. McHale's Navy.
No way.
What Bruce Campbell like?
Big way.
Big way.
That's all I remember from it.
Was confusing this with Down Periscope the whole time.
Understandable. Yeah. Understandable.
I was like, where's Kelsey Grammer?
Where's Toby Huss and Patton Oswalt?
And so this was based on a 50s show?
Yeah. Ernest Borgnine show. Four seasons. Try and guess how many episodes.
800 episodes.
Oh, yeah.
140.
Oh, my God.
140. That's why television sucked. Like, we get two writers and we'll make 40 episodes a season.
Yes, this is... I feel like the 90s, there was, you know, the wave of TV, shitty TV adaptations where... this is when I don't understand why they would do it, because people, the audience they're looking for has no idea what McHale's Navy is.
Yeah, it's a sitcom set in World War II. And interestingly enough, the trivia behind that is that Ernest Borgnine starred in like an anthology show playing McHale, and it was a drama. And then they turned that drama into a sitcom with the same character.
I could get why they would want to. Like, let's get a bunch of modern comedian funny people.
Yeah.
Because, like, this was a time when if I knew Bruce Campbell was in a movie, I probably went to see it just because he was in it.
And
it doesn't have to be McHale's Navy. You know, a wacky Navy comedy.
I would disagree with... You can't
that
remake it
no
because
sense.
It was funny in that time period because you had World War II vets who were finally ready to laugh at the experience of World War II. You could do that premise.
Yeah.
You can't do that premise now and expect me to care, or millennials to care, or in 1997, anybody to 16-year-old care.
16-year-old me who just got a driver's license.
Yeah, like, why do I care? So
I don't know. That cast was pretty,
The cast is insane. But Bruce Campbell does write about it in his book and says that what the director asked you to do, he's like, our direction was to walk behind Tom Arnold, and if I do anything on film, it's because I made it up. and I'm paraphrasing him there.
I mean, Tom Arnold's a real comedic force.
It is, because he says like all his scenes were cut to focus on Tom Arnold, which lets you know nobody knew what they were doing.
Stupid?
Yeah, this was his year. I'll say that much.
It's what the people demanded. Yeah.
And then finally this week, our last movie.
I've got a murder at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
That's great. Thank you, Wesley Snipes.
Says the title, you wins the movie.
Yeah, I've never seen this. It got terrible reviews. And I wanted to because at the time I loved Dennis Miller Live.
Sure.
And Denny Miller is in this film.
The premise just I found real intriguing back in the day.
Yeah, a body shows up in the White House.
It's a body at the president's house.
Yes. And the murder goes all the way to the top, or to Alan Alda, who plays the national security advisor, who are generally uncorruptible.
Murdered 1600, Wesley Snipes, Diane Lane, Dennis Miller.
Never
saw it.
Directed by Dwight Little, who I feel like has been like trying to get Brett's attention his entire life. He is the director of a lot of X-Files and Millennium episodes. He's directed some Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes, Halloween 4, Free Willy 2, and most recently, his most recent theatrical contribution to the world, Tekken. Tekken the movie.
Whoa.
Dwight Little wants you to love him, Elson.
I've seen two of the things he's done. So.
You ever saw Free Willy 2?
No.
Willy's Revenge?
Even Willier. Big Willy style, I'm sorry. Free Willinium.
Fucking whale keeps getting captured. They have free him again.
Four times.
We sent him back to Star Trek 4. And he ate the humpbacks. Ugh. TV, get us out of here, dude.
All right. Big sitcom week.
No.
So last week we were talking about Dan Aykroyd threatening to fuck John Cusack's head hole.
Yes.
Yep.
So he balances that out by debuting the show Soul Man on ABC.
Oh, my God, that's right.
A sitcom starring Dan Aykroyd as a widowed...
Black-faced?
He's a widowed Episcopal priest who has to deal with his children. Episcopal is that's one of the religions where the priests can fuck.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's widowed. He has kids that
one
he
that
has
was
to take
created
care
in the last 200 years.
Yeah, so he has to deal with his children, but all is also his wacky parish.
We know how wacky it can get down at the parish.
And I don't want to get tangenty, but I remember this, and it sucks because it's how it works. That's how they get you.
Oh yeah, I think Al Borland, he appears in an episode of Home Improvement.
I didn't even remember that.
As Al Borland's parishioner.
Priest?
Yeah.
I was TV and movie obsessed, and this was on the cover of our newspaper's TV guide for the week. So I looked at this 50 times a day for 7 days straight. Yeah. So I'll never fucking forget it.
Yeah.
Soul Man, which I never saw, with Anthony Clark in it. Did we say Anthony Clark?
Was he in it?
Yeah, apparently he's in it.
Yeah. And they're totally fucking with you with that title. You're like, the Blues Brothers became priests.
Well, yeah. But
I'm on a mission from Gia.
Much like Walk Like a Man, it's like, well, we thought up the name of the show first, then. Also this week, April 14th, 1997, another sitcom, The Single Guy, ends its run.
Thank God. Oh, no.
After two seasons and 44 episodes. And I know you're wondering, was he still single?
Yeah.
He was not. The second season ended with Jonathan Silverman's character getting married in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. It's also notable that
this
is one of the highest rated shows to ever be canceled because... it usually aired on Thursday nights in between Friends and Seinfeld, so it would be like fourth or fifth in the ratings. Mm-hmm. But NBC realized anytime we move it out of Thursday evenings, mm-hmm. it's ranking in the 60s. So let's not renew this show. It seems like it's dead weight.
Because, like, if you just think of it, it's called The Single Guy.
Yeah.
Who on NBC was married in that period? Everybody's single. Well, how is this the hallmark of your television
Certainly
show?
Not the Friends on Friends.
Yes.
Because on this very same week, April 17th, 1997, the Friends episode, The One with the Chick and the Duck, introduces new pets for Joey and Chandler. Like, I don't know if you remember, they always had a chicken and a duck in their apartments.
I do not.
And it just reminded me that the show was weirdly about, like, bachelors adopting weird animals for the first two seasons. Because there was Marcel for the first two seasons, yeah. Ross had a monkey, and now...
Monkey.
And now, yeah, Ross, or Chandler and Joey have a duck and a chicken.
That's dumb. I don't like this show.
Yes. Well, keeping up with animals, April 19th, 1997, airing in the Plum Spot immediately after the 10th Annual Kids' Choice Awards, Angry Beavers debuts on Nickelodeon.
Awesome.
This is around the time I was kind of out of the loop on Nicktoons. But
I was too, but this show was great.
Yeah, it aired for four seasons and 63 episodes. Here's the theme song.
I'm not one for rocket power.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
that's
definitely out of the Nicktoons thing, but at some point in here, I did watch this like for like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I somehow got sucked into this, and every time I was like, "This is pretty good."
Yeah,
it was like weird and funny.
They're beavers who moved to the big city or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it was just like jokes were like, this isn't like it was like reminded me of Rocco to a certain degree of like, these jokes aren't meant for like a 10-year-old.
Dare I say, two stupid dogs esque?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a reference for no one, but it's fine. That's what I'm here to do.
We're a cat dog family.
Nick Bakay, one of the voices, a guy I really liked, who had a bunch of Comedy Central pilots that never went, and they'd rerun endlessly anyway. And he's better known as the voice of Sabrina's cat on Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Salem, please.
Yeah, Salem.
A more notable animation milestone this week, and airing 10 years and one day after The Simpsons made their worldwide debut. Is the Simpsons episode The Old Man and the Lisa. Actually, this isn't that big of an episode, but it's notable because this is the only Simpsons guest star that I have a Simpsons action figure for. Let's play his clip.
And I'm sure a pro wrestler such as yourself will appreciate all the closet space, Hitman.
It's Bret Hitman Hart.
Ooh, this place has got old man stink.
Ooh.
Don't listen to him, sir. You've got an enchanting musk.
Love that line.
And you wouldn't even be the only wrestler in the neighborhood. The Shrieking Sheik lives just three doors away.
Because I was trying to get you something for your birthday. I'm like, Dave loves The Simpsons and loves wrestling. Surely there's a Simpsons episode with a wrestling guest star. No, this is it.
Yep.
One moment. Wow. That is the only one
it's
in 30
weirdly,
fucking years.
Like, I remember seeing this at the time and I'm like, man, the Simpsons, you can do better than this. Yeah. Like, this is WWE near their lowest point. Like, they're finally starting their ascent with, like, WrestleMania 13, and then the Attitude Era starts at, like, the end of 1997 into 1998. But this is, like, they had, you know, given how animation cycles work, they were reaching out to WWE, I'm assuming, at, like, WWE's lowest point when everyone's left WWE.
That's
and
why
like,
they gave him Bret Hart.
Yeah,
their
it's like Bret Hart was their biggest star. Like, not Hulk Hogan, not Macho Man. They've left. This is the best guy that you have. And it's like, I love this episode. I love that clip. But I even remember, like, I don't think...
It's
I don't
bizarre.
Think one-tenth of the audience knows who Bret the Hitman Hart is.
A 30-year show famous for its guest stars having no other wrestling representation, and the only one is Bret Hart.
Yeah.
That's insane
that is
to me.
Strange.
And they made a figure of it. It's like, we might as well.
But it's a great... He looks great. Like, he's like the all pink, the sunglasses that Bret never got in the mail.
Nope, still angry.
So this is the episode where Burns and Lisa team up with recycling. And then Liz decides...
and Lisa's animal slurry.
Recycling? Every time I walk by a recycling bin, I say it that way. Recycling?
Yeah, and he decides, oh, well, we have to clean up the planet, so let's clean out the ocean. It's full of, like, live animals and plants and shit, so let's kill them all!
I do love this episode so much for independent Burns. Like, going to the supermarket, where are the Burns O's? They don't make cereals for losers.
Looks a bit like me.
Was it ketchup, catsup?
Yes. And I am riding on a bus.
Man, I guess that's the only time I'll have. I'm getting off topic, but that when he has the ketchup, catsup, and he's confused, and then the people come up, like, "Are you here?" And like, "Time to go, old man. You're really creeping everybody out." And he goes, "Like, are you here to solve my ketchup problem?" There was a point years later where my friend and I go to McDonald's, and I get the goofy novelty size soda they make at that point, and come back, and I was filling up my ketchup, and I go to sit down at the table with my friend, and as I sit down, we're already doing the quoting Simpsons constantly back and forth to each other, and I go, "Are you here to solve my ke-?" And as I say that, I trip, knock this gigantic soda, and I mean, it is like a Gushers commercial of Coke that just explodes everywhere, and I have to turn around immediately and walk back up to the front, and I have the same soda that I just left less than 60 seconds ago with the lid askew, completely empty.
A bunch of beaded brown liquid on the sides of it.
And go, "Can I get a refill?" And you can tell this lady knows exactly what happened. Somewhere in this restaurant is a half gallon of soda.
Oh, wait, you didn't spill it on your friends, though.
No. But it's like, it's all over the table with a pound of ice. This lady just helped me. And the travel round trip time to come back and be like, "Yeah, I need a refill." Like, what did you do?
Yeah. Man, the correct Simpsons reference to use with that would have been, "I am waiting for a bus."
Or you could tell her, "Yeah, fucking flip it for a profit. No law against it."
So then we tried to use newspaper to clean it up. The newspaper, when we peeled it up, left the print on the tile floor of the McDonald's. Yep. Like, we have to go.
There's a Doonesbury cartoon forever embedded in this seat.
I think if it was a review for Deep Impact.
So this very same night, the episode of X-Files Small Potatoes airs. Brett, you put this in here? It's about...
Yeah, because this was a weird one. Vince Gilligan, I think, either wrote or directed.
Breaking Bad's Vince Gilligan.
Yeah, kind of getting a start. Fourth season, 20th episode.
So yeah, that's notable that it's... Dude! It airs on 420, and it is the fourth season's 20th episode. The X-Files producers really knew their sex number.
Yeah, but it is a weird episode in that babies are born with tails.
Right!
And this lady believes that Luke Skywalker is like her father or something, and it's full of Mark Hamill Luke Skywalker gags, even though he never shows up. But here's the promo.
Sunday on an all-new X-Files. How do you find someone?
We're looking for a man who can appear to be his own father or anyone else.
Who can transform himself.
Is everything okay?
Into anyone.
What the hell?
Even an FBI agent.
Now I'm seeing a whole new side of you.
The X-Files, a brand new episode.
So she tried, like, he basically, they tease Mulder and Scully might kiss because it's an imposter Mulder. Mm-hmm. And you might be like, wait, are the actors going to kiss? But yes, there's this whole other story about, like, this lady who has a tail sticking out of where her spine is. And there's just a weird, a bunch of goofy Luke Skywalker jokes.
That promo is weird. And it's weird in the same way that, like some Lost episodes in 2007 are, where it's like, I watched this episode. It's a comedically driven episode, but you still have to make it dramatic because that's how you sell this show.
X-Files hadn't totally got to the point where you could market their goofy episodes on the goofy side. Mm. By like season 5 and 6, it's like, oh, it's a silly one, okay. But season 3, 4, it's still like, I don't know.
I mostly remember the end of this where like the whole thing is, he's like a shapeshifter type guy.
Yeah.
And part of it's, you know, they realize it's because he has low self-esteem. He wants to be everyone else, not himself.
Aww.
And then
story of every actor.
Yeah, and then at the end, he's just telling Mulder, is like, man, I thought I was a loser. You are such a goddamn loser. It's like, goes to his apartment, it's just porn. Yes. It's like, Mulder, you fucking suck.
Oh, yeah. I do remember this.
That's fun.
I didn't have a specific song to take us out, so I will go out, even though it's an 80s song. I knew you were waiting for me.
Thank you.
Aretha Franklin and George Michael.
Thank you.
And when we come back,
I'll put the knife down.
All right. This same week, 2007. When the river was deep, I didn't fall.
ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And for April 14th through 20th, you know, I'm kind of disappointed that there's nothing really good for 20 themed, especially at 67, 50 years ago this week. So I'll make some kind of slightly random tangential recommendations. If you survived Casino Royale last week, good for you. I will actually recommend as a actually funny movie, it's sort of sister movie, What's the New Pussycat, which is made by mostly the same people with mostly the same cast. It's not a great comedy, but it's pretty dang funny. Peter O'Toole, Peter Sellers, Woody Allen, seeing any combination of those people together is just sort of bonkers anyway, but I really like it. That's out of 65 is What's New Pussycat. And then also I had trouble nailing down the date on this, so I'm just gonna throw it out now. It's either in April or in August 1967, again 50 years ago this week, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead premieres the play that is about the small characters in Hamlet and what they're doing off stage when the rest of Hamlet is going on. By Tom Stoppard. I really enjoy it, and there is a movie of it from 1990 with Tim Roth and Gary Oldman that for some reason never really got a release in the US. But I enjoy it. I think it's a pretty good film version with Richard Dreyfuss as the player king, and like I said, all the shenanigans going on while everyone else is poisoning and plotting to poison and going to kill each other and soliloquizing. So Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, 1990. Plus What's New Pussycat with the Bitch and Tom Jones song. I love Tom Jones. Anyway, that's it for this week. Stay classic.
Arctic Monkeys, Fluorescent Adolescent,
yeah,
from the album Favorite Worst Nightmare. 10 years old this week, 2007.
Back when I bothered to read about music, I thought I remembered reading, like, Arctic Monkeys being forecast to be, like, this big breakthrough between, like, artistically credible and popular breakthrough, and man, did that, you can finally say that did not happen.
Yeah, I remember, like, yeah, there being some heat around them for a couple of years, and I remember trying to get into one of their albums and not totally clicking, but it's fine.
I remember someone calling them the Beatles of our day, and like...
Well, that's a curse. Don't
tall
say
order.
That. Don't say that.
I don't know them well enough to say one way or the other, but I'm a Marty bum, man.
No. But yeah, well, Arctic Monkeys' second album, Brian Storm and Fluorescent Adolescent, the two big songs. Also out this week is Year Zero, Nine Inch Nails' fifth album. Which is a concept album that takes place in the year 2022, except it's called the Year Zero. And after numerous terrorist attacks, the U.S. government has assumed complete control of the country and has engaged in a fundamentalist Christian nation with morality police, thought control, and total fear and 1984-y stuff in 2022, which the government names Year Zero.
It'll be right at the end of Trump's second term, so I can totally buy it.
I'll be in the middle of the second.
I'm restarting the years now.
It's going to be the best year.
It's starting at zero.
Sad, tremendous, all that stuff.
But yeah, Nine Inch Nails, apparently it did fairly well, but I completely missed this one. Mm-hmm. Like the only song from this era I know is Bite the Hand That Feeds You, because it was in Rock Band, and it's not on this album.
Yeah, and that's like 10 years before that.
Yeah.
That's their fifth album, though. For some reason, I just expected them to have more.
Yeah, I did too.
Over time?
They did a double album in between this, and it seems ironic just how industrial and electronic the music is. They toured a lot.
Yeah.
And then I think Trent Reznor focused full time on scoring id games.
Yeah, I saw them in some, like in 2000, whatever album was out at the time.
So after 311 set the record for sucking balls?
It was the same year. Might have been the year after. But yeah, studio, it's at least their fifth studio album. So there's like remixes, live releases, touring, soundtracks and stuff. But studio albums, Pretty Hate Machine, Downward Spire, The Fragile, With Teeth, Year Zero. And that's where we are now, with the most recent album being Hesitation Marks from 2013. 2007 news, 10 years ago this week, the Virginia Tech shooting, 32 dead, 23 injured. For some reason, I thought this was longer ago.
Was your buddy Greg there when it happened, or did he just go to that school?
I think he knew the shooter.
Yeah.
Like, he was in one of his classes.
Yeah.
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 This is like, and I feel like it's still going on today. And I mean, this guy kind of fits the same mold as a lot of shooters, like rampaging shooters, which is like sad, lonely man who just like has enough or something. Like, and it's almost always like someone in like the high school to college age who does this. I mean, I guess you could say it goes like back to Columbine and probably even before that. But like, this is when I became aware of it. And then it's like, it seems like every year there's one guy who does this every year.
Yes.
I'm not going to say his name because I think part of the reason that some shooters do it because they want the attention, because they feel they don't have it. I know this took a lot of shit from not very smart people about, violent video games did it. Or violent comics, because he was super into The Punisher.
It feels awesome that we're past that. You can't do that anymore.
Past that.
You can't blame that. That's good.
Yep, but bloodiest mass shooting in the U.S. for 9 whole years till Orlando.
I'll say that now. We're recording a day ahead of time. You never know in this country. To bring it back around with a joke, did you know Virginia Tech is actually from the show Southern Cross in Japan? Anyway, I'm trying to trying to bring it back with a pop culture joke that wasn't depressing.
Obviously,
it was a Robotech joke.
The answer is if everyone on campus has Tech Nines, then they
could.
If
everybody's armed, nobody is. What?
Yes.
I don't know if it's something about late April that makes these things happen. Because that Columbine, I remember it was 420.
It was 420.
On the sex day.
I want to say either they did it because it was Hitler's birthday or because of Waco. Because Waco.
I mean, it would be.
I feel like Waco might have started it was around that time. And then Timothy McVeigh in Oklahoma City specifically wanted to do the anniversary of Waco, which is really close to 420. I want to say it's like 423.
Because Columbine is that, and then this is April as well. So like they're all in that same week period. Fingers crossed, everybody.
Man, this is going to make a lot of comedy this week awkward, I'll just say.
Yeah, we'll move into movies. Fracture, Anthony Hopkins and Ryan Gosling.
Who cares?
I'm kind of interested.
Shots fired.
Hostage situation.
Your wife, is she here?
I shot her.
You shot your wife?
I got the gun. I shot her in the head.
Be careful with this guy. There's something not right about him.
I go in there with a signed confession, and I put this guy in jail.
Because it looks like Anthony Hopkins playing a Hannibal Lecter type.
Yeah.
Fucking with his interrogator, who is actually a defense attorney, Ryan Gosling. Ryan Gosling, because Anthony Hopkins is a man who immediately confesses to the murder of his wife once the police show up to a crime scene and... maybe he did it. Signs a confession, but there's still a mystery. I don't know what it is. I think Fracture's another... Name one other movie in this this show we couldn't name Fracture.
Isn't that also the name of a LucasArts shooting game?
Yes, it is.
Around not long after this, frankly.
I'm vaguely curious about it just because it's got an amazing cast for what seems like a pretty generic thriller. I mean, it's got Hopkins and Gosling. It's got David Strathairn, Rosamund Pike. I think Andre 3000, M. Beth Davis... Billy Burke, I always love, so... question mark. Cliff Curtis, the Kiwi guy that everyone thinks is a Mexican. You know. No, seriously, he's a guy you've seen in a million fucking movies, and you're like, oh yeah, he always plays like gangbangers and like Training Day and shit. He's like a Kiwi.
And then Kristen Stewart is in The Land of Women.
I don't know anything about this.
That's
written
and
directed by John Kasdan, who through nepotism is making the Han Solo movie as we speak with his dad, Lawrence Kasdan.
And then Vacancy with Luke Wilson.
And I went to middle school with his nephew, Luke. Hi, Luke, if you're listening. I really did. Because it was a small town, and he's like, what'd you do for Thanksgiving? Like, Kevin Costner came over. I'm like, what? Yeah, they just made this Western Wyatt Earp or something.
Is this about In the Land of Women or Vacancy?
In the Land of Women. The Land of Women. Did you say Vacancy or In the Land of Women?
That would first.
Vacancy sounds the
Vacancy.
Most interesting. Because what's the description of In the Land of Women? A boy travels to his grandmother's house and meets her neighbors. Like, holy shit, Snore! Like, you couldn't release a movie
like
without
that reality.
I watched the trailer, and it was just a bunch of, like, bad jokes, and like, what is this movie? I'm sure it got good, decent reviews. I'm sure it's fine. It's just, I've never seen it or heard of it.
Yeah.
Same with Vacancy, but at least that centers around a snuff film. Wait, no, that's 8mm. This is Luke Wilson? And who else? The unwitting...
Kate Beckinsale.
Potential subjects of a snuff film.
And Frank Whaley.
They're locked in a hotel room. They see a tape. They can't get out. And it looks like they're going to be the subject of another snuff film.
Mm. Oh, no.
Which is it even snuff if you don't film it, man? Trying to segue out of this. I don't want to talk about this movie.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it. But yeah, not a lot. Mercifully light on movies in 07 because like the last few weeks, it's been a giant pile of movies. But this week, even though there's not a lot...
Oh,
this is a good
one.
Police Constable Nicholas Angel, born and schooled in London, graduated Canterbury University in 1993 with a double first in politics and sociology, attended Hendon College of Police Training, displayed great aptitude in field exercises, notably urban pacification and riot control. Academically excelled in theoretical coursework and final year examinations. Received the Baton of Honor.
You can stop this anytime. I just love the intro to this. Edgar Wright is one of the greatest directors like working right now. Cannot wait for Baby Driver. Fuck it. This movie rules, and it might be my favorite of the Cornetto trilogy.
Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz. Yeah.
Yep.
Simon Pegg, Nick Frost returning from Shaun of the Dead for the first time in film, or for the first time since Shaun. This is stupid. What a stupid sentence. Mm-hmm. The guys from space making their second movie, and this movie's great. He's a cop who gets busted down to a small town for being too good. That was a montage of how great Nicholas. Oh, I forget his name, but
Angel.
Nicholas Angel, the Simon Pegg. It's like the most un-Simon Pegg role he's ever played.
Yeah,
where he's a super
he's a
efficient hard ass.
Well, he's bookended by like. He's a guy who can't get his life together in Shaun of the Dead, and then he's a guy who can't get his life together in the end of the world, I think.
World's End.
The World's,
World's
End,
yeah.
And that's this is the end. This reminds me of This is the End. Like, having a comedy with that many people in it. Right after this, you get an appearance from Martin Freeman, Steve Coogan, and Billy Nighy in a single scene, who are, like, you know, the biggest comedy people. Some of the biggest comedy people in England. Stephen Merchant cameo. Nick Frost, Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg goes to a small is so efficient at his job, he's kicked out of the London police and has to go work in a tiny town where there are no problems, except maybe there are.
Which is also kind of what This Is the End is like, where it's like, small town, oh, wait, things are amiss.
And we're like, spoiler, an ending where everybody fucking dies. Hmm. Like, this movie is fantastic. Every single second of it is funny.
It is such a loving homage to 80s cop action movies. That's really the big point.
I feel like that's like the biggest stumbling. I really like this movie. Mm-hmm. I like Shaun of the Dead more because I have more knowledge of zombie movies. I don't know Bad Boys that well. I know
Point Break. Have you ever fired your gun in the air and gone, ah? No, I've never fired my gun in the air and gone, ah. Like, and they reference Point Break and Bad Boys 2 throughout the film. Yeah. They watch them together, so you see footage of them. And the entire third act is just a reference, visual reference to those films in a beautiful, exquisite, ridiculous action sequence. Killing old...
Yeah.
It's so great.
With, old people.
You've got a mustache. I know.
Yeah.
We would be remiss if we did not mention the comedy stylings of
Timothy Dalton.
Dalton,
man.
Timothy Dalton enjoys being suspicious so much in this movie.
We're slashing prices! this movie is so fucking great.
I love how it's selectively violent. There's only two or three scenes, but it's like...
But they're gross.
They're jaw-dropping.
It earns its R rating so wonderfully.
Oh, God, when that gargoyle hits that guy, it's the most disgusting. Gosh,
and when you get to the end, the reason why they killed him, the typo.
That makes I am a professional copy editor, and that is one of my favorite things in movies. Because I was seeing, as we're watching, they drop in, like, people looking at the local paper, and I'm like, what a shitty headline. But I'm so used to, in movies, they fuck up the headlines, or they're just, you know, the fake stories are badly designed, and I'm just used to, prop newspapers, they do that, and I'm just like, oh.
They
also
hate their local...
And it turns out that was a plot point.
Their local actor and director, and I just watched this the other night, organically, because I love it so much, that he's like, come to see my production of Romeo and Juliet, and it cuts to it, and it's just this 50-year-old man dressed like Leonardo DiCaprio and Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, and they close out the play with like a fucking show tune rendition. I can't care about anything but you. Romeo and Juliet. This movie is so funny from beginning to end. Every moment is great. Yeah. I fucking love it.
And it'll probably be the other movie we watch this
I
month.
Hope so. Because you haven't seen it?
No.
I've seen it,
I love
but
it. I think
I want to rewatch it.
I think because it's the middle of these, the really great Cornetto trilogy of Shaun of the Dead, This Pod Fuzz and no, World's End. End.
I keep making them. I'm never going to stop mixing them up.
Yeah.
I'm never,
I mean, they came out within a couple months of one another. Yeah. But this one doesn't get enough credit because it wasn't the first or the last, but it's so good.
Yep. And it's a broader genre than Zom Rom Com or whatever is going on in World's End, which I really like World's End. Yeah. I think it goes to kind of sadder, deeper, more interesting places in weird ways. But
And Edgar Wright is like a more. Not evolved or a younger version of Tarantino who like loves wearing his movie references on his sleeves, but doesn't stop for 45 minutes to talk about them.
Yes.
We'll remind you, I'm going to do this in a second, but I want you to know that, and then maybe go see this.
Yeah. Hey, pay attention. Hey, this guy, it's Belloc from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Everybody, you want to see what's going to happen? Huh? It's like no, it's just cool.
And there's,
I am just a little bit worried about Baby Driver because. This trilogy and Scott Pilgrim, they are so like ingrained with like references I know, even though this one's a little bit less so for me. I'm just worried, like, will Baby Driver going to be its own movie, or will it still be like chock full of like crazy references?
I don't know. This isn't chock full of a ton of references.
I know, but it's still like the thing I remember about it is Bad Boys and Point Break and how they love those movies in this movie.
Point Break is the last movie, and this happened, I guess, when I was an impressionable youth. I saw it and loved it, and for the next week, dreamed about it.
Wow.
I had every night was a dream about Patrick Swayze surfing.
TV Love this week.
Yeah, I think to make your point though that you know there's a lot of references, but a good reference is a reference where if you don't know the reference, it's still fun.
Yeah.
Yes,
and only, that's 100% true in this movie.
The only catchphrase in this movie is "Yarb." Yarb.
Narb.
My favorite scene in the movie I can't even describe because it looks like an improv sequence that they somehow scored with an orchestra. It's so great. I love this movie. Hot Fuzz, people. It is on Netflix for nothing.
Really? Yeah. Wow. Nice. So TV this week, not a lot of stuff, but it's all pretty important comedic stuff. April 18th, 2007 was the mid-season finale of South Park called Night of the Living Homeless, so capitalizing on the zombie movie trend, but this is replacing zombies with homeless people. Not really a great episode, but I do like how they showcase the transformation of someone turning into a quote-unquote homeless or zombie or whatever. Kyle's dad, he's trying to escape this zombie horde.
He's got some change. Don't have any change.
Change!
Don't have any change.
Change!
Damn it! All right, you want change? Here! There! There's some change! All right, a little bit. There you go. Take the change! Oh, wait. Wait, now I don't have any change left for the bus. Hold on. Can I just get back some of that change, please?
Change, sir.
Can I have just a little change for the bus, please? I need a little... Anybody have some change? Change? Got any change?
That's it.
That's pretty clever. I don't know if I even saw that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's the high point of the episode. The rest is just kind of meh. April 15th, 2007 is the season finale of Tim and Eric. Awesome show. Great job. And
I feel like we just had the debut. Yeah. It's only
the 10 episodes.
They like to, they air back to back and then boom, they're done. But, you know, this being their first season, they have a cliffhanger, and it's making fun of cliffhangers. Like, looking at this, I am reminded of the season 3 Lost cliffhanger, where it's just, like, darkened road, mysterious thing happens. So the thrust of the episode is that Casey, of Casey and his brother fame, goes missing.
What's the problem here, son? Who are you?
My name is Casey, and my papa told me not to talk to strangers.
I'm not a stranger, son. My name's Steve. Come on my van. Come sit up here in the big boy seat. I'll take you home to Peppa.
And this character, Casey,
he
like always has this like perpetually sweaty, dirty face.
He seems like every time he comes back, he has more sores and vomits during songs even more.
I have a surprise for you, Casey. It's your pet.
And it's Richard Dunn, the old man that just seems to guest on a lot of Tim and Eric episodes.
There's somebody trapped in a cage.
Yeah.
It's just super creepy that shows like where they'll go with bedtime stories in a few years where they're like,
oh man, I gotta watch this show then. I've never seen
dude
American Bedtime Stories.
We watched the first one, like, oh, this will be funny, right? It's like, Jesus Christ. And then we watched the next one. And the second episode is just about someone who collects the toes they cut off people. Oh. And it's not played for laughs. Like, it's fucking weird. It's
the closest thing we have to a great anthology show at the moment.
Yeah. It's so bizarre.
But it's also weird because, like, of course, everyone knows Steve Brule, and he got his own spinoff. And I liked him at the beginning, too. But when I first started watching Tim and Eric, the thing I would share around the office were these Casey and his brother clips. Because he would just be singing a random song and just like, help!
They're so weird, but yeah. Oh, man.
I had shrimp and white wine in my head the other day. Whole walk down to the store because... I had to go to the store and I had to get two things, and it just became the shrimp and white wine song. But my version of shrimp and white wine is soda and tampons.
Soda and tampons.
Whole time I'm like walking down there thinking in my head, I'm dancing, I'm posing, soda and tampons.
And then you start puking.
Start doing a dance on top of someone on the beach. They're like, ew.
And last but not least is Saturday Night Live this week, April 14th, 2007. Host is Shia LaBeouf. Musical guest is Avril Lavigne. Who cares about them? What this episode is notable for is the digital short entitled Dear Sister or The Shooting. And you'll guess why it wasn't shown afterwards. But So characters keep shooting each other while... And every time they shoot each other, Emojim Heaps Hide and Seek plays. And this is supposed to be spoofing an OC episode.
The finale of the OC.
Yeah, an OC episode where someone gets shot and this song plays. So I have the beginning of the skit.
Yeah.
What you doing?
Nothing. Just writing a letter to my sister.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I haven't seen her in years. It's weird because...
What you say. That's Andy Samberg shooting Bill Hader. That you only meant well, 'cause you did what you say. That it's all for the best, 'cause it is. So if you skip ahead to 3 minutes and 11 seconds,
that sucks balls. It's a 3:11 joke.
Yeah. So the skit basically boils down to people continuously shooting each other every time they shoot somebody. Yeah.
The song plays. The song starts over,
and then the capper is really good.
Brother Keith. P.S. Then two cops will read this letter and shoot each other. Now isn't that the most ridiculous thing you've
They just keep shooting each other while that song plays over and
man,
over.
Man, okay. Giant SNL nerd here. Hi, I'm Chris. Yeah. It's the weirdest thing. This is the most topical. This is a very SNL non-digital short sketch done really well in a digital short. Yeah, but they're referencing something that happened that week.
Well, they're not referencing Virginia Tech.
They're referencing fucking the OC finale that just happened.
Well, that happened a couple weeks.
It was
already talked about it on the show.
To my knowledge, they're referencing an immediate pop culture reference with the exact song, which makes more sense in an SNL non-digital sketch, which is still digital now.
Yeah. But I mean, they always have some, like the original one was about Chronicles of Narnia being in movie theaters.
Yes, but
like,
all the digital shorts, you can watch any one of them right now and they'll make a ton of sense. Whereas this doesn't because you'd have to remember an episode, a show that concluded in 07.
I saw it not knowing anything about the OC.
It's still funny.
It's still funny.
But I'm saying on the flip side of that, we've seen memes that incorporate this.
It's very visual. Just people randomly shooting each other.
Yeah. And then every time someone pulls the trigger, a song starts. And the reasons for all the shooting is completely arbitrary and sometimes just because...
Doesn't it really exist?
Yeah.
And I later saw it in the video where Roman Reigns betrays the shield, or Seth Rollins betrays the shield.
Hits him in the chair. Boom. What you say?
Games this week, nothing big, but a game called... Super Rub-A-Dub.
What?
That began as a PS3 tech demo, because, you know, normally when a new console comes out, they show, like, oh, look at the water physics in a bathtub, and there's a little rubber ducky.
There's 128 Marios on the screen.
It's like my grandparents' code for blowjob or something.
Yeah, we're going to the Rub-A-Dub, Christopher.
I got a Super Rub-A-Dub from that day.
But it later became a game, and later a famous YouTuber parried it, and it made, like, $1 million or whatever. But if you're curious what a trailer for a game... in which you play a rubber duck popping balloons sounds like, this is the actual trailer for the game.
I instinctively looked away from my phone.
Is there at least text in front of the screen saying, like, play as 8 different ducks?
No. It is
just gameplay.
5 different tubs.
Close up of a duck.
No trophies yet.
You know, like carnivals where there's like the ducks floating around, yeah. You lift one up and follow. It's, it looks like that, and you rotate a map.
That's the most boring part of a carnival to me.
Oh, no, I wanna... for the shark.
Received a 2 out of 10 from IGN.
Oh, no.
It looks incredible. I want to play right now. Bringing it out to the end of the show, comments, again, from 302010.net.
We love it.
Love reading your comments. These have really like put a lot of the show's stuff in context and just let us know what you were doing or thinking. And some of these stories have been great. Buckaroo Banzai. I know you guys are and listeners typically avoid sports, so I can see why North America's whitest sport might not provide much interest. However, some fun stuff you missed in the first 3 months, January, at an international hockey tournament in Piastini, Czechoslovakia, a game between Canada and the USSR, January 87.
87, okay.
Erupted in an all-out bench-clearing brawl. It was so bad the referees left the ice, and in an effort to stop the fighting, turned off the arena lights. Eventually, the game was declared null and void while both teams were booted from the tournament. The kicker, it was a youth tournament. All the players were under 20.
Wow.
Over half the players involved would play in the NHL, and 2 are now in the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
And then in February 19...
I gotta see footage
write down,
of that,
just
man.
Write down when I come up with my post-apocalyptic thriller, I'm naming the character Nolan Void. Just write that down.
February 25th, 1977... I'm only a tiny bit surprised this didn't come up in Classic Corner, but the movie Slapshot was released on this day.
That's true. Classic Corner, though, I try to keep it to 50 years ago and 75 years ago.
Yeah.
And if those remind me of something else that we missed from 1985 or before, I've got all of that to work with, but I'm trying to keep it with weeks, man.
Yeah.
It's tough. We do have something in 77 coming up in the summer, the invention of something very important.
Ooh.
And it's not me.
Death Star Paul Newman was directed by George Roy Hill.
I love Slapshot.
It's really good. Yeah. It is so violent and
so
raunchy and it'll
is
hold
super
up forever.
NPC, man.
And it's the most un-Paul Newman movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, have somebody's legs broke.
Kifuji. First off, great show. Second, thanks to your 1997 bit, I know the week, month, and year of possibly the greatest video game sin I've ever committed. The sin is even worse than Chris returning RC Pro-Am for Mickey Mousecapade.
Don't
bring that up. Toys R Us had just started letting people trade in games for store credit, so during my spring break, I took a whole athletic duffel bag full of NES games to trade in. Oh. I traded away Blaster Master, Final Fantasy, Dragon Warrior, Mario 3, Mega Man 2, Metal Storm, which is pretty valuable now, and a great game, and more for the paltry sum of about $1 each.
Wow.
And what incredible game did I trade away 10 years of collected titles for and played for about 2 weeks before realizing I'd made a craptacular mistake.
Oh, God.
Did it come out recently?
The 1997 reminded of him of Battle Arena Toshinden 3. Toshinden 3 for all of those games. And then finally, Mookie. So I've probably seen The Saint well over a dozen times.
Oh, man.
Why, you ask? Well, this was the time when DirecTV had something called All Day Ticket.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning when you rented a movie, you could play it over and over, and you'd have access for 24 hours.
Even what it was. You didn't so much rent the movie and stream it as you unlocked the channel that played the movie 24/7.
Yeah. So you'd have to wait for it to sync up with you. Start until...
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Is that how it
works? No, it was, because my friend had to unlock cable box and, what's playing right now? Ah, shit. Shawshank Redemption is 40 minutes in. Yeah. 3 hours before it stops.
Said his brother and his grandparents' house, who were rich enough to have DirecTV in 97, both were huge Val Kilmer fans, so we asked if we could rent it, and, long story short, we watched it over and over and over and over again.
And again.
And famous deaths this week, April 14th to the 20th, 1987, Dick Shawn. He died at 63.
Oh, my gosh. This guy keeps coming up.
Yeah. Who we had last week on the last episode of Amazing Stories.
Yes.
He's great in Mad World. He's great, so great in The Producers, the original 68 version. He is fucking hilarious.
I'm trying to see. Is he a star of a bunch of live-action Disney garbage that I love?
Entirely possible.
While you look that up, Chris, I'll tell everyone to go to 302010.net.
Hey, how about that?
That's where you can leave a comment yourself and follow along with the notes of the show. You can also... check out our Patreon. The show is Patreon supported, and this is how the show came to be.
It is. Thank you, people.
Patreon.com/lasertime.
Yes, you literally finance our existence, help us make other shows. And, you know, we ain't rich, but we're not starving. And every little bit helps, so we do encourage more support if you can. If you can't, then Patreon's not for you.
It's okay.
Yeah,
but
you
still love you.
Yeah, you can.
People keep saying I don't have a job right now, but I'd love to donate for your Patreon. I'm like, yeah, you don't have to feel like that.
It's okay.
Yeah,
you could watch our YouTube video.
Patreon's for people with jobs.
Yeah.
Yes, Patreon is the home of our weekly show Bonus Time, where we talk about what's interesting us in 2017. Also, the home of Cheap Podcast, the pro wrestling podcast that has old man stink. And tons of commentaries. We'll do wrestling match commentaries, cartoon TV show commentaries that are that require no sync at all. And also, our Monday night movie, where last month we did Twister, and because of its 30th anniversary, Raising Arizona, and I'm betting we'll be doing at least one movie that has that we've talked about on this show. Hopefully, Hot Fuzz.
In January, we watched Black Dynamite, which was
so much fun. He's Snow Miser in A Year Without Santa Claus, Dick Shawn. That's why his name sounds familiar to me.
Oh my God, the producers! If y'all haven't seen the original 68 producers, besides it being literally, I think, the funniest movie ever made, we're really close. His version of the hippie that's they hire to play Hitler is so good. They're like, okay, so you're gonna audition for us. What are you gonna do today? He's like, I don't know. And they're like, well, what do you do best? And he's like, I can't do that here. That's why they put me away, baby. Anyway.
Out.
If you like video games, there's Video Game Apocalypse, which is a show entirely about video games. And if you want to talk entirely in producer's lines, I am on Twitter at Lacine Nerd.
Lacine.
Lacine.
Lacine
Nerd. And for what it's worth, if you're playing Breath of the Wild, the new Zelda game, Chris and I put together a video that is over 80 references on the map screen that reference back to classic Zelda games from Ocarina of Time to Oracle of Seasons, Minish Cap, Twilight Princess, and everything in between. It's a fun little trip around the map. But anyway, the real end of the show is Birthday Quiz. Thank you to the home movie song. Birthday Quiz, one male, one female. Get ready. Oh, you're too loud.
Is someone bracketing this on like a wiki somewhere? I hope I'm winning.
So. I hope we used to have wikis made about us. Not anymore.
I've got a Glass Joe-esque record, I would assume.
Born in 1976.
All right.
And my brother's here.
41.
John Rudden. Was it Sean Rudden, my brother? No?
Did you say 46? What?
76.
See, 41 now. Turn 41.
Played the same character in Boy Meets World, Teen Angel, and Clueless.
The same character?
The same character. This character also appeared in her own show.
Alicia Silverstone.
No. Prior to this actress was a Nickelodeon star playing the titular character in that show.
Not
Raven Simone? No.
Not Alex Mack?
No.
Not...
Melissa Joan Hart?
Yes!
Yes!
Oh,
yes!
I got one!
She's not in Clueless?
The TV show.
She's in Clueless?
Made one episode. I don't know.
I really flip-flopped there.
Wow. The streak is over.
Right.
The new streak begins. I'm going to get this next one.
Fuck this. The Rain of Dave. I'm going to end it right now. Watch.
Born in 1973. Won a Best Jesus.
Best
won
Actor.
Best Actor Oscar. Was in The Thin Red Line. Splice.
Adrian Brody. No, not Adrian Brody.
Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Back.
And Predators.
Oh, Adrian Brody.
Was it Adrian Brody?
But you said not Adrian Brody.
No, I said not. So, Adrian
technicality,
Brody?
I win.
You are right.
I'll give it to them.
No.
I'll give it to them.
You started it, but because you like fizzled out, I'm like, I need
I just
it.
Like, wait, no. And then you didn't, after I said the name, you didn't stop. So I'm like, well, I'm clearly wrong.
I had my jaw open to go, and then you're like, no, that ain't
the fact. The fact that that's the first person I thought of out of Thin Red Line,
yeah.
Which stars that's everyone.
Yes, was had 1,000 Oscars and winners in it.
Yeah. Wow.
God damn it.
Yes.
God damn it. I didn't get a single one.
Chris says,
I forgot to mention a few things over the last two episodes. Predators was directed by.
What?
A man named. It's not pronounced Nimrod, but it is spelled that way. Until. And he also directed a little film called Vacancy. The same guy directed Vacancy, directed Predators. I meant to mention that. And also, the only reason I even wanted to talk about Slow Burn is because it holds the record at number 2 of the biggest second week drop-off in box office history.
Wow.
Yeah, so I missed those facts from the last episode, but I wanted to rattle those off before I burn these notes.
Damn.
We'll go out with Capital G, which is from Nine Inch Nails, Year Zero.
Capital G?
Capital G, Trent.
Splendid.
Which starts, it sounds like a industrial version of The Way You Make Me Feel, and then it turns into a Nine Inch Nails song. But when we come back next week, more of what happened 30, 20, 10 years ago.